maybe it becomes a, you know, a narcissism of small difference.
Hi, I'm Rachel T.
Hi, I'm Eva.
Hi, I'm Rachel G.
We are all Girl Scouts, and this is WGXC ACRA.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Christiana Abel in Housatonic, Massachusetts. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5.
Welcome to the Thingularity Radio Program, broadcasting live from the Catskill Makers Syndicate. Tonight we are brought to you by our Boeing representative, Lucinda Bowles. How is everybody doing tonight? Ben, what's up?
Doing well.
Working hard, I see.
Yep. Squats and burpees.
All right.
No burpees. No burpees? Okay.
Working hard, working out. Greg, how you doing?
Good.
He's returning.
I just returned from climbing Panther Mountain yesterday. So
sexy Panther Mountain?
Where's Panther Mountain?
Panther Mountain is right next to Slide Mountain, and I just discovered by accident that it was the site of a meteorite hit, or rather an asteroid a half mile wide, about 375 million years ago. And the story of that discovery is kind of interesting, but moving right along.
We might get back to that. Tom, how you doing?
I'm feeling singularly good.
Singularly.
Well, let's hope that feeling's permanent. Cody, how you doing?
I'm here.
All right.
Ready to bite my gums at anything.
We are extant, and that is hopefully good enough for our listening audience. Brian.
Yeah.
Sound tech, how you doing?
He's busy.
He is the magician on the board, and apparently he's been working hard at it. So we appreciate the efforts no matter what. Just thanks for the magic, okay? Making it work. All right. Any topics? Anybody got anything they brought today before I start getting dark by reading the news?
No, no. I want to hear about this
Slide
asteroid.
Mountain. How about that?
Yeah, Panther Mountain asteroid. Hit me.
Well, when we were climbing up there, we noticed the rocks were kind of different than anything else we'd encountered. Like, they were...
glowing?
Usually you see sedimentary rocks up there. And
right.
These were kind of metamorphic and weird, like...
conglomerates.
Conglomerate, exactly.
Yeah.
And,
ooh.
And that really struck me. And I said, you know, guys, this is metamorphic. There was some volcanism or something. And then just by accident, I discovered that the meteorite hit based on the presence of the Esopus Creek that goes around it, kind of in a circle. And then they began testing the soil and found indicators of an asteroid hit.
Wow.
Nice. This is pretty cool.
And actually, from the summit of Panther Mountain, you can still see the remains of the crater rim.
You see the bowl?
Yeah.
Nice.
Even though it's something like the surface of the crater is something like 3 kilometers below ground.
Let's go dig it up and see if there's any lithium in there.
By the surface, you mean sort of like the depression made in the bedrock?
That's right.
And it's all just been filled in with debris and,
that's
you know,
right.
millions of years of sediment. Dust accumulation, yeah.
Well, if you drill down, can you recover some of the... extraterrestrial materials like the glowing green kryptonite that you can use to deal with your comic book superheroes, or is there some other materials that we need for rare earths? I like that.
Cobalt.
But presumably they date.
Sorry, but that information is classified.
if we told you, we'd have to kill you because then you don't know how to use it.
But, you know, what surprised me is a half-mile-wide asteroid hitting there, you'd think that it would make an enormous impact. I mean...
It would. Half-mile-wide?
What?
Half-mile-wide
yeah,
asteroid.
The entire continent felt it.
It's a kilometer, or a killer, or a kilometer.
Yeah, I'm constantly telling people about, 400-meter-wide, meteors with enough power to take out, let's say, Venezuela. So if it was actually a half mile wide, yeah, that was felt. That was serious. Like, you're seeing the long-lost remnants, but all the wildlife in that area, dead. All the higher order creatures on that continent, probably dead, within a couple years because of all that crap. Yeah. It's bad. So just remember, folks, that could happen to you anytime. Have a good day.
Well, these extraterrestrial rocks are called near-Earth objects, or NEOs. And that's the telescope I'm currently working on. It's called the Tripwire Optic, or TWO2. It's a special kind of telescope that's passive, but if something crosses it that isn't supposed to be there, the computer rings a little bell. And then you get an agile telescope to go try to figure out what it is.
Something like that is insanely crucial because the near-Earth objects that we know about, we know a lot about a lot of them, but all the time we're seeing brand new ones and they come out of nowhere. They're just a swing and a miss. And then once we have their trajectory, we can mark them for the next time, but we're always getting new ones just like that. So that telescope could save lives.
Yeah, I've been working on this for quite a while. The idea is that the things you can't see are visible as they make stars twinkle. In other words, they occlude, or they cause an occultation in the stellar background. So if a star blinks, but it's an inconsistent blink, and then another star blinks nearby, and then another star blinks nearby that.
You got a vector.
Yeah, you have the vector. And once you figured out the coordinates, velocity, and direction, then you go to the conventional telescopes, which I call agile telescopes, because they're kind of...
How do you decide where to place this this tripwire optic what to observe it against?
I have big plans. It gets everywhere. You put it everywhere.
Everywhere?
Yeah, and the reason you can get away with this is it's made out of the same kind of glass as your window. window glass.
But how's it everywhere?
So, well, you want it up in high altitudes, so up on
somewhere in orbit.
Up on top of Slide Mountain.
Oh, no, not in orbit?
No, not in orbit. Oh. It's looking up at the sky, and the sky is parading past it because of the rotation of the Earth. So the moving platform for something that's this size, and I'm talking kilometer-scale telescopes, well beyond anything that's even on drawing boards today.
I mean, Arecibo wouldn't do that?
Or something, huh? Pardon me?
Arecibo is a radio observatory.
Bigger than Arecibo. Way bigger. It's like kilometer scale. And it's made out of window glass as a result of it being made out of inexpensive material. You can have many of these observatories all around the world. It works at night. It won't work during the day, but it's always at night
somewhere.
I'm pushing this next week. I have all
are there regions of space that these things could theoretically be watching, but be ineffective?
What
is there any region of space where there's nothing for an object to occlude?
We're not,
thus be
it
detected.
Would be, it's just,
yes, yes. There are kind of holes in the dome, but mm-hmm. where there isn't much going on. But of course, that's half of it. The other half is that many things give off light as well. So, you know, you can see these things coming from their self-illumination.
So, theoretically, an alien species wishing to destroy us could position their weapons outside of that dome and then cover everything with Vantablack and launch it at us at relativistic speeds.
Well, yes, we've been done for.
Thus avoiding the tripwire.
You know, the truth of the matter
I'm just messing with you.
The truth of the matter is, no, that I'm pitching this to the military.
Well, just flick asteroids at us. And
they're very paranoid.
Now.
No, Space Force. Space Force wants that.
Yeah, Space Force
if
wants
they're
that.
Not doing stuff yeah, like that, then what's the point?
I'm pitching it to people who have money.
Space Force.
They have $1 million, and they give me a brass ring if they like the pitch. Next week, Cornell. Why don't you come and cheer me on, you know? It only costs $100 to get in.
$100?
$100. We'll let you into
just to go view something?
Give us $100. And then you can stay in the hotel if you give us $250. And then, we'd like a pink Cadillac and, like martinis and...
All right, so what I do is stand outside the place and give a guy $20 to stream it for me.
Oh, they're in...
So we give Tom... 100, and then we buy him drinks, and then he'll just tell us.
Just tell us the idea.
I'm not paying. I'm going. I'm going at their invitation. They invited me.
That is cool.
Well, that's nice. Yeah. We'd have to pay to get in.
So we pay.
Yeah, you'd have to
and
pay.
And then we still have to buy Tom drinks.
And then, you'd have to have ulterior motives as well in order to justify your attendance. Like, yes, I'm from the... SPIE, the International Photographic Engineering Society.
SPY.
Yeah. I mean, I've given, 40 papers at that conference. Every year they throw it. And I keep going back.
they keep
pitching my wares. Since 1987. This is the first time I gave a talk there. Yeah, SPY. And so, Anyway, I'm desperate for someone to wake up and smell the coffee because I've been designing versions of this telescope. This is just one of them, or two of them. TWO. It's with Tripwire Optics, TWO. And it's kind of neat. It has two mirrors instead of one. It's totally outside the literature, which has always been my problem. I must be crazy. I'm making a telescope out of window glass. That can't be.
You gotta convince some bright-eyed graduate student to just write a paper. Be like,
no, I've been there. The graduate student wrote a really crappy paper, and I said, this is not addressing, the parameters that are important, and he wouldn't address them anyway. And I said, did you do my math? I mean, just tell me if my math is wrong. And he said, well, I'm not going to go over your math. I'm going to try to find someone else who wrote a paper on the same topic and I'll trust them if they agree with you.
Oof.
What?
I was like, how does that how, you, that's not how science works.
He got a PhD last month.
That's not how science works.
No.
No, and it's
spit in my face, why don't you?
It's been really, it's been a very long high period for me. It's not even funny anymore.
No, I feel your pain on that one. That's some infuriating crap.
But it's neat that you can build a telescope with glass that can be mass manufactured in quantities that we all are familiar with.
Are you saying telescopes aren't made out of glass?
They're made out of a very special polished glass that costs millions of dollars for the scale that I'm talking about. In fact, you couldn't even build one.
And your glass is cheap and unpolished.
No, like, right. Tom, I do have some questions. Would it be one contiguous piece, or could you have multiple smaller pieces creating the telescope?
Yeah, it'd probably be made out of smaller pieces because it's really hard to handle a kilometer's piece.
I'm just asking. You know, I don't know.
Would they be arranged, like, butted up against one another?
It's a ribbon. It looks like a ribbon.
Mm. Is it possible to 3D print glass?
No. No.
Are you sure?
I mean,
you could 3D print titanium.
It would probably
plastic
break.
You can
do the plastic. Internal stresses.
Maybe with sintering.
The sintering temperatures are not the same. The glass is so incredibly hot.
Well, anyways, the glass is kind of secondary to the thing that makes it work, right?
No, the glass is what makes it work. You know, back in the 50s, Corning invented a kind of glass that was photographically sensitive in ultraviolet light. And they couldn't figure out what to do with it, but I figured out what to do with it. So I can turn it into optical elements. So that's what I'm pushing. Pardon me for going off on my tangent. There's Elon Musk's spaceship and so many other things to talk about.
Elon Musk's spaceship?
Well, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's, what was it, the fourth?
Why do we care?
I don't know.
We don't. Keep talking. If Elon Musk was sitting right next to you, believe me, I wouldn't be talking to him.
Wow.
Ouch.
Dang.
He's a...
What about one of
everything he's got?
Well,
to
I just say
little,
Elon Musk. I mean, forget Elon Musk.
What about one of his engineers
There's
for
a spaceship?
SpaceX?
Okay,
that you talk to them.
I want him. I want him on the show. I want his engineers on my show.
Yeah,
his Tesla
engineers, talk about the
SpaceX
spaceship.
Engineers. Yeah, the people that actually work and have brains.
The spaceship's actually interesting,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, we don't have to.
Oh yeah, recycled spaceships.
We don't have to personalize it.
No. Okay. Cool. Well,
you really,
I'm gonna.
you pushed the button by even saying his name.
I was trying to change the topic from obsession. I don't get me started. It's the first thing I should always say.
Well, before you go on, I just have a question about that. How big an area of space can one of those units cover?
The whole sky.
Oh yeah, the design is so bizarre. It sees from horizon to horizon.
He's big picture, literally.
From horizon
all at once.
It absolutely breaks every rule that they're trained to
not a strip of sky.
Is
but
this
based it's a strip from horizon to horizon.
Trip wire optics.
Okay.
Based on your star tracking.
Pardon me?
The star tracking optics that you've come up with where you just scan the whole sky and then you run it through a spectrum so that you could tell
it's based on
distances?
Yes, based on telescopes. It's really a variation on the original.
So it's a strip of sky from horizon to horizon.
That's right. It's a trip wire.
Yep.
What's the resolution?
A resolution is what they call seeing.
What is it called?
Seeing. That's why you put it up high, as far up above the ground as the sea level as you can, 12,000 feet or 14,000 feet or something like that. So at those altitudes, the resolution is on the order of arc seconds or even less. I mean, you can get, you can get 500 milliarc seconds or something on certain nights up there. But you can't. Nowadays, when they build a telescope, they try to make an artificial star, and then they correct the error in the telescope. And it looks like the sky isn't there, but it's through a little tiny straw. You can only see the corrected sky without the interference of the atmosphere for a degree or less, actually much less than a degree, with adaptive optics. So if you're looking from one side of the sky to the other, you can't use adaptive optics of that type. It's just too wide a field of view. So the resolution is limited by seeing. That's what the astronomers call it, which is very limiting, because the resolution of anything that's above 100 meters is, if you were looking at things orbiting in near-Earth orbit, you could read the serial number off the satellite.
Whoa.
Yeah, I mean, the resolution's ridiculously good. But the atmosphere gets in the way, unfortunately.
So that's why we use lasers.
What are you talking
about? Well, the lasers will correct... The lasers will correct a tiny little bit of the sky.
That's right. Like the little tiny part that you're looking at.
I call it a straw.
The opposite
you're
of your...
You're looking through a straw.
Yeah, that's kind of the opposite of what yours is doing.
Exactly. And you could design it so that if you found something you wanted to study...
Then you would go ahead and look at that through the straw.
Then you could put the straw to follow it.
Well, couldn't you just blast the entire sky with an ion beam?
No. Yeah.
You know, yeah. Don't worry about migrating birds. We're good.
No, it doesn't work that way. Not yet, anyway.
All right, I'll buy you a beer.
Fair enough.
But, you know, there were two aeronautical... events in the last day and a half. You know, one was getting the Boeing thing, Starliner up.
Boeing managed to not blow their plane apart, starship apart. Yay.
They're not doing very well.
That was like, what, 5 years past due?
Yeah, it's way past.
The news said third time's a charm, and I'm like, no, it's 5 years, shut up.
And what's the point of that thing?
Well, it's an alternative to using the SpaceX.
They're
just trying to compete.
Sorry, Boeing.
It's for diversity of platforms. Not unlike in communications, you don't want a pool of doom. You don't want a spacecraft of doom with only one platform. So
this is true.
Considering
no single vendor.
Yeah.
What's going on with some of these Teslas, I don't know if maybe an alternative to SpaceX is smart. Like this one woman that got stuck in her car in 103 degree heat.
Oh my God.
In a Chick-fil-A parking lot because she decided to update her Tesla.
And the doors just locked and then wouldn't open?
No. She refused to open the door because she thought it would interrupt the process and could brick her car.
Yeah, but I don't think, Tesla's fault.
I mean, if they've cultivated an attitude or an expectation in their users.
Well, I'm going to sit in my hot car and bake so my car's update doesn't get me stranded.
That they expect opening the door will just brick their car. That's kind of their fault.
Yeah. Well, you heard
you
about
bought
it
that car.
They did buy that car, but
pending litigation.
Although a lot of people are suing Tesla because they bought a car that is not able to deliver what it's promised.
Wait. What was it promised? What was the lack of?
Oh, let's see.
The breach?
In the cold, they don't even charge.
Oh, okay.
In heat, they update and they lock up. A couple people have already lost like their cars due to updates. They had to be factory like not recalled, but brought to the factory just to get
it to pinhole it.
How about driving it through a gully?
Get a paper clip. Press the reset button on the Raspberry Pi that's in there.
Don't take it through a car wash. You might just start glitching out. Like, don't get a Tesla. You know what? I'm going to tell every person: if you make three figures, if you make six figures, go buy a Tesla. The future needs you to basically pay for the R&D. Everybody else that has real jobs, don't. just get a nice, reasonable, fuel-efficient
vehicle. Who says people who are making six figures don't have real jobs?
That's true. Now, I think if you get
six figures ain't even that much.
It's a hybrid. It's now considered
a lot more than
probably
I mean.
The best way to do it.
In the grand scheme of things.
And my argument is that hydrogen is the fuel of choice for
why is fuel cell not competitive at this point?
Well, this is a story we told before here, and for 20 years when we could have converted to a hydrogen economy, we decided, Let's spend it on war instead.
It's as bad
right,
as
let's have war to get more of those hydrocarbons.
It's a lot. And, if you are a person doing real work, your work will cost you more money by using that device than any standard gasoline device.
Wait, there is hydrogen, but that program's finally hitting an
hydrogen
end.
Hydrogen infrastructures only exist in places that can take advantage of
it. Yeah, so the Toyota Mirai, which has been operating for a decade or so in L.A., and they get the hydrogen from the Shell plant, there's a lot of...
As a byproduct.
As an actual thing that the refineries have targeted. In fact, the first hydrogen pumps were right next to the refineries in Wilmington and San Pedro and Carson.
So what's the point if you're just going to refine it out of the oil?
So that was the political move to try to get adoption going. If you can see that this thing works, then you start building a $1 trillion hydrogen infrastructure and you can make this thing work. But I think the Mirai is at end of life. I think they're giving up on it. Toyota might be switching gears now.
Yeah, it's certain
switching
point.
Gears. Oh. That's a metaphor.
Good one.
I mean, at a certain point, batteries are just going to take over for efficiency at a certain point. But right now, gasoline is the winner. And like, what is it? Places like Norway or wherever they have hydrothermal, where they have basically tons
Iceland.
Of free energy, that's when they can do the hydrogen infrastructure because it's...
You can crack the water.
It's free.
And then
separate
when everything.
You have to actually produce it yourself.
We could do that here. We have desert with plenty of sun that gets 120 degree days in summer.
Yes.
If you stuck it in the middle of the desert, you can produce all the hydrogen you want.
You've stored it.
The crap out of you.
What's that?
Try building that infrastructure while the oil companies sue the crap out of you.
That's what stopped it, is the oil companies don't want to see hydrogen, green hydrogen.
Uh-huh.
So they've definitely operated with the same mentality as any other self-serving capitalist corporation. Mm. It doesn't matter whether there's anything ethical about it or even if the entire planet roasts as a result. But the hydrogen is available if you use solar to do the cracking.
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
Easily done for the entire continent and beyond.
And I have, this big plan where you generate the hydrogen and then you condense it down to temperatures cold enough so that superconductors will operate inside the transmission line. It's got a jacket of hydrogen and a jacket of nitrogen on the outside of that jacket to keep everything at the right temperature for superconductivity. So now you can transmit the electricity, and I see if you have superconducting transmission from the southwest where the energy is being generated, it is as if the factories making electricity were next door. I mean, it's
because superconductivity means there's almost no resistance
in
the line.
As soon as it's superconductive,
no power loss.
The plant
almost
might as well be in your backyard. It's
but
that
Tom, you're talking about a society, a country that can't even build a train that hits 100 miles an hour. I'm just pointing out
correct.
The obvious.
This is correct.
Yep. I'm talking about a technology that is needed. You know, I've ragged on this, and I've gotten. I got some negative.
We're also working
here.
On room temperature superconductors
like crazy
too.
Ideas. But the idea is that the solar collector itself cools because it's converting at 100% efficiency. So the sunlight comes down, and rather than warm the ground and re-radiate an infrared and cause climate change through heating, either it's converted to electricity at 100% efficiency, or it's re-radiated right back through the sky. And so it turns the thermostat down. And we're almost at that point where people might listen to my crazy idea.
Yeah, that actually is a good crazy idea.
You know, it's an
well, the negative feedback came from a misunderstanding, where I wasn't understanding that you were talking about only letting in light in the band gap that is in the band gap wavelength of that solar panel.
Well, I'm
reflecting the rest.
No, he's talking well,
right.
Okay, yeah.
I'm glad that you know I keep ragging on it. Eventually, people listening to this radio show will get the message. All five of them.
Yeah,
we're all in this room.
And we.
And
we're all in this room.
If one of them is the energy secretary,
and
that's the only person you need to hear.
Make, you know, those six figures I was talking about and would like to buy me some solar panels just so I can get back at Central Hudson. I would love that.
But in the event that you are listening to this radio transmission, it happens to be at, what's the frequency,
90.7 FM. Right.
Oh, wow. That was smooth.
You are listening to WGXE 90.7 FM, Catskill, Acre, Hudson. Radio for open ears. Please continue.
Wow.
Well, I got this great string that I run between my ears. I call it mental floss. And I'm cleaning out the plaque. It's building up because I suffer from old-timers. So I don't even remember what I was talking about.
Yeah, you do. It was a solar thing in the desert with the magical 100%.
Oh, yeah. I
keep cooking with the magical. Yeah.
It is magical. It's not my idea. The idea it was originally patented in 1978 or 79 by a friend of mine who's passed away since. But he understood that if you collect the light with a diffraction grating, you can break it up into its component parts.
What friend is this?
Steve was a holographer. Did you know Steve McGrew?
No.
No? He's a friend of Rudy's. Rudy introduced me to him. Rudy Bearcouch, another holographer. They both passed away. And it's really unfortunate.
Steve McGrew?
He, you know, if you looked at the credit card that had the little hologram on it, that was his. He was printing money. He made so much money from that.
Speaking of what to do with your money.
But before all that happened, he was considering how to have an efficient solar collector.
Yeah.
And he patented this thing. And I use his patent illustration when I start my talk, although it's more complex than he originally saw, because there have been changes in photovoltaics since 1978.
Right.
So the photovoltaics that I want to use are quantum dots. Quantum dots are like tiny atoms, and they have band gaps that you can tune. So you can tune to any particular wavelength, and if you get it just right, has to be just right.
Are these sort of panels being mass produced anywhere?
No.
Or are they? Well, are they?
The experiments have been run.
I was going to say, are they a subject of academic research?
Right. Academic research.
Yeah.
Theoretical research, but the experiments indicate that that's a feasible target if people get crazy enough to try to solve the problem, because I don't think they can get rid of hydrocarbons quickly enough. However, if you can turn down the thermostat this way, even though there's carbon dioxide and methane, which is 20 times worse, in the atmosphere, nonetheless, there's not that much incident radiation.
Okay.
And about 2% of the Earth is sufficient to turn down the thermostat.
Well, none of this is going to matter because Skynet's first move is basically just going to be blocking everybody in their car and just watching them expire. So
I agree.
None of that's
I agree 100%. We don't need these water bags anymore.
Then they'll have the walkers left, though.
The walkers?
People who don't do the car thing. So or you who has
no.
Car
then you just drive the Tesla into them.
Oh, gotcha.
What do you think they have auto driving?
Okay.
That ain't to help the passenger.
It's to live in the woods.
It's to defend the vehicle.
I was going
to
say, I mean, well, all the people who live in the woods.
And then, computer society starts by taking all these Teslas with the cooking meat bags inside them, and it starts driving them around and making them do jobs.
Oh, my gosh.
And this is the new economy.
That's already happening, sir.
But there's still meat bags inside. You got to cook them first. That's the future. You're just a hot dog.
Where is this coming from?
Just a desperate attempt to try to change the subject.
Oh, I'm very sorry.
The Tesla meat bag filled.
No, I was
autonomous
just
cars.
Okay, it's a half hour. We could do something. We just did something to pull something out of the news.
So it's kind of like a gross version of Grubhub.
Yeah. Yeah. Gross. See.
Until they learn how to consume our bodies, and then it's, you know, DoorDash.
Yeah, they
exactly. It just brings them on over.
Feed off of the meat bags.
No, I have no problem with the whole satellite idea.
Satellite.
And the solar. Tom's spiral from satellites to studying the stars to controlling our temperature with the solar.
There's one way to turn down a thermostat. Just get rid of all regulations on diesel fuel and bunker fuel. Just let them keep putting the sulfur dioxide in the atmosphere. Everything just... it raises the albedo of the Earth.
More bunker fuel is Cody's solution.
So rolling coal.
Yeah, isn't that what worked during the pandemic when all the ships crossing the ocean stopped producing as much pollution? Temperatures rose.
Really?
Yeah.
That's the bunker fuel. That's
part of the reason.
Wow.
Everything's getting warmer, and that's part of the reason why insurance rates are spiking about 125% in Florida.
Yeah, so... They kind of knew...
What's that? If you can get insurance at all, I mean,
right.
You can say, why not insure? And they'd say, because it's actuarial. Your property won't exist in 5 years.
The actuarial says
he won't be there. Mar-a-Lago, you know, I'm just, you know, praying that 100 degree temperatures in the water 50 yards away from, you know, that particular compound of evil.
They were talking
brings the mutant sharks on shore.
They were talking as early as 2009. About what the effects of legislation that or policies that regulated the amount of sulfur dioxide or sulfur in bunker fuel and diesel would do if they reduced it. They figured it would increase the radiant heating of the Earth as early as 2009.
Bingo.
Then they talked about it again once it came up in 2018, and then they finally implemented it.
It does
right around the same time as the pandemic, and now we're feeling the effects of it.
Wow. It does go kind of like backwards. It's like, just keep smoking. You'll be fine.
It seems backwards, but I mean...
In a weird way, yeah.
They were inadvertently...
One pack a day is not enough. You need five, sir.
Yeah.
Well, it's like we have rheumatoid arthritis, so keep the fingers working. We have to keep smoking.
If you smoke keeps the assassin from seeing you. You're just... which one's going to kill you quicker?
It was an inadvertent geoengineering experiment. The same thing could happen if a volcano belched a ton of sulfur dioxide into the atmosphere.
Alameda in San Francisco won't let the people experimenting with cloud generation continue their experiment.
Oh, yeah.
That's been going back and forth and back and forth. Now,
and Tennessee won't let you do, quote, contrails.
Yeah, well.
What?
Yep, that's actual legislation.
Like, planes do that automatically.
I meant to say chemtrail.
Yeah, but...
No, contrails are what planes do. Chemtrails are what paranoid people think planes do.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, your tinfoil hat won't...
So in Tennessee, is it illegal to, like, sail off the edge of the Earth, too?
Probably.
Well,
and to talk about climate change,
they don't know what people could be doing, so limiting that sort of thing might have a reasonableness to it. But I mean,
wow,
I would want people spraying random chemicals over my house. Would you?
We call it crop dust.
Random, obviously, it's some insidious plot, and you could probably find the formula for the pharmaceuticals you're spraying. I mean,
okay, well, you get to know what poison
pharmaceuticals. Who mentioned pharmaceuticals?
Well, that's what they're spraying.
The chemtrails.
Consciousness-altering pharmaceuticals that make you...
Oh, God, tell me there's a plane just dumping LSD as it flies.
Yeah, make you vote for the wrong party.
Sorry, isn't that a plot point from Brave New World? Come on.
Yeah, Soma. I want some more. Where's my Soma?
Clouds of Soma.
Yeah, it works. It worked then. It'll work now. Wait.
Oh, my God.
Mm. Well, then as long as Soma reflects photons, it'll cool the planet as well.
But this isn't the answer, because that's atmospheric, and you need the sunshine to grow crops. What I'm talking about is designated areas where there are no crops anywhere.
Just cut it down by a few points.
And it's sufficient in scale. That is, if
you mean
combine,
like desert or like
ocean? If you combine the outback in Australia with the Gobi Desert and China with a whole stretch of the Middle East where they're currently pumping oil, they could be making solar. and cooling the Earth at the same time. They could also be sucking water right out of the Red Sea and the Gulf and so on that's down there. They got the water. They have the energy. They could be making hydrogen, and they could be shipping the hydrogen in super-cooled pipes that provided both hydrogen electricity to Europe and anywhere else.
Oh, that was nuts. You didn't say that before.
He did say it. You just
No. He said a jacketed cable.
So the jacket is
made
of...
you were pumping the hydrogen and electrifying it.
The
hydrogen cools the superconductor.
There you go. That's what it is. And yeah, hydrogen...
You get okay. Both. You get the stored version of it.
Okay.
And then you get the instant...
The utility.
I would just have to point out
that for
it to maintain the temperature, you're going to have to constantly bleed off hydrogen.
Well, then there's an outer jacket there, too. The outer jacket's nitrogen. So the nitrogen brings it down to workable, cool temperatures. So you don't have to lose it in transit.
So how do we protect these pipes against, say, I don't know, a shepherd with a battle axe?
Well, that's what the nitrogen's for.
No. I mean sabotage.
You place an automatic defense drone every 50 feet, so when a human comes near it, it just executes them.
Yeah,
problem
like,
solved.
To be fair, I mean, like, you know, we already run high tension wires.
This is true.
Yeah, it's true.
Hey, kid, go play with them.
It's like you solved the problem itself.
He solved the problem.
I'm assuming we're going to have to bury these for safety.
Speaking of high tension, hey, Tom, has the little ditto seen the new monopole-type towers that they're putting up along the thruway going south?
Well, a little ditto hasn't been around to look. He's prodigal now.
Oh, I see.
He took off about a year ago, and he was going to go to California, but he never got there. He got as far as Denver.
Denver?
Oh, that's a good place to stop.
Nice.
He just settled in, so...
Nice.
You know, but he
good
used to track the power pathways that were being put in that
right.
Include the monopoles, and there were several variants on that right near us. Where we were going down to Poughkeepsie all the time, and they were putting a set in there.
Yeah.
And you'd go off on these hikes.
Just to follow him?
Just to follow him. He was quite compulsive about that.
Cool.
So, and he was explaining to me all the different structural methods they're using. So I was talking to somebody the other day about what happened with my father. Was somebody who had been asked by the government to suggest means to do photovoltaic conversion around 1978. It was Carter administration, and my father's expertise in semiconductors led to his being
energy.
Putting in a
right.
team, and he had to write a report, and he wrote a report, and he said, yes, well, solar is a very good idea, but there aren't enough raw materials to make it in the standard manner because you dope the silicon and you'll run out of the materials that are required for that. So if you
we don't have a bunch of Chinese factories ready to crank them out right now.
You know, it's not necessarily true for what I'm talking about.
As far as the 70s go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That didn't exist.
Well, no one was going to pay any attention to it for a long time anyway, but they knew. This happened to me. I was down in Atlanta and I went into the Carter Library, which if you're in it, is the Carter White House. They recreated the White House, and you go in there and you can look in all the filing cabinets that they had there. And I was pulling out filing cabinets and reading reports. I was looking for
what?
My father's report.
That's
but
cool.
I read reports saying, oh yes, by the end of the century, the polar ice caps will melt. They knew what was happening, and that's why they were pushing to try to get solar. Electrical energy distributed out
and
on
I'm,
a scale that competed with coal.
I'm
going
to tell you right now, the only reason the government cared about that global warming is because it's a major economic benefit to the Russians. I'm sorry, the Soviets.
I'm talking about the Carter White House, and you got it all wrong.
And they weren't worried about Russia expanding their economic domain through the Arctic?
I suppose they might have had a factor for that, but no, they were concerned about exactly what happened. And in fact, it's been known for 100. By that point in time, it had been known for about 80 years this would happen. So at the end of the century, the predictions about carbon dioxide were honest. They matched the graph that had been projected in 1895 or something like that by researchers who were just trying to figure out what carbon dioxide does. And so they knew it for a very long time. And by that point, experts were saying, we better come up with solutions. But my father couldn't come up with a solution, so he said, well, I know what we're going to do here. We're going to take the grass clippings that we have from the lawnmower, and we're going to make alcohol out of it, and we're going to heat with alcohol.
Yeah, if only.
And so he actually got in touch with the government. He said, well, I've got one proposal. And they said, no, you can't make ethyl alcohol because we'll have to tax it as... He couldn't do it.
You couldn't do it or wasn't allowed to do it.
I had built a little solar still and everything. But so that didn't work out. And now I'm coming up with some...
Wait, I'm sorry, but what part of the ethanol didn't work out?
Huh? The fact
ethyl
that
alcohol has
you gotta tax it as something you can drink. The same way that you...
No, you don't. You denature it and then you don't have to.
Yeah.
Yeah, well...
Interesting.
So you made it toxic.
I had a solar still ready to go, but it didn't denature anything.
I built the regular
still.
It
denatured everything.
And I was ready to start dumping that stuff into my gas tank when gas was $4 a gallon. So it's...
Yeah. At any rate, the little ditto, you know, presumably around long enough to try to put in these distribution systems. I don't know. They're not necessarily going to be on pylons, though. I think, like you're saying, it got to.
What are these things you're talking about? What do they do?
Oh, I had mentioned the monopole type that they're putting up, going along the
monopole
freeway.
Type of what?
High tension lines.
Okay,
power lines.
They're like cutting down. Lines. Like,
okay.
Yeah, they're cutting down. They're cutting down the strut type towers.
Yeah.
The boxy and stuff, and now they're putting up monopoles.
Monopole pylons.
Monopole.
And they got like three little branches on them.
Yeah. Great.
Two on one side.
They're also changing the cables. The cables had been a core of steel and an aluminum wrap that went around the core, and the net mass was so great that there was a limit to how much they could wrap the supporting. A cable, so they've gone to a special kind of polymer that's stronger than steel and
at the core.
At the core,
yeah, they put
and then they wrap the aluminum. Yeah, you've seen this stuff.
Yeah, I was listening to NPR.
Yeah, that's an improvement in traditional transmission, and they also experiment with DC versus AC.
DC is better.
DC is better at those voltages. Yes.
So it's a carbon fiber polymer?
Yeah.
Something like that.
And
don't forget, the ground is a leg.
What?
The dirt. The dirt under that pole is a leg transferring power.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, well.
It's
whenever you see one wire, there's two. Whenever you see three wires, there's four.
Hmm.
Whatever happened to that idea of transmitting power wirelessly?
No. Government came in and said, we won't do that.
Well, the thing about that is...
Shoot microwaves through the air.
It would mess up WGXC, something terrible.
Yeah.
This was also like way back before a lot of modern technology existed.
It's like 100 years ago they were proposing that.
You would get what's called flashover. The power traveling through the air would actually be just... Every little piece of metal would turn into its own little antenna, cause a voltage spike, and if it's high enough, it will jump... From that wire to the next one. That's
St. Elmo's fire all the time.
Yeah. That board, be sparks and be dead. We wouldn't be on the air.
Yeah.
Well, last year I heard about a pilot project where they managed to successfully transmit. I don't know whatever happened.
Maybe transmit over what distance?
Maybe a narrow band.
Kilometers. You can transmit on microwaves.
Huh. Yeah.
That's the current.
I think you're better off transmitting on a laser beam.
What?
Or a laser you can't.
You can do it.
There is a PoE laser. We found it. It was like a fraction of a milliamp that you would get on the other side.
What?
Well, you can use
what?
You can use
what?
Magnetic radiation is focused at a particular wavelength, and then you can transmit without wires.
Okay, yeah. It's
pretty sure that if you train like an army of squirrels to run through wheels, that would probably be a more pragmatic solution.
No,
Joe?
No, not. Well, you know what? Yes, if you're going to do it here on the ground and you're going to try to generate electricity that way, yeah, you might actually be better off that way with the squirrel army.
But
if you're going to try to extract power from space with like a giant solar panel just sucking up the photons coming out of the sun 24 hours a day and you got to beam it down to the ground somehow.
Microwaves.
There you go. It will work. You just need a giant induction coil on the ground to pick up the juice, and there you go.
And nobody get near that point.
What do you mean it doesn't work?
Well, if you are collecting solar energy in orbit, you have to point it back to the Earth. And there's only one orbit that allows you to do that, and that's geostationary.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 23,000 miles out.
That's it now. Huh? It's called a solar orbit. Which is a polar orbit.
No. Solar orbit, you'd have to keep aiming.
Yes.
And
you'd have infinite power to do it with.
No, but you'd have to aim it. That's the aiming that's the issue.
And what? I don't understand the problem.
The problem is that
aiming is free if you have infinite power and a gyroscope.
Aiming is free, but you have to have the receiver that's receiving it to have a good clear shot at where the energy is coming from, and it's flying by much faster than the stars move at night. It is really whipping by. And the only place where you stop it dead in its tracks so that you can aim it properly
is geostationary.
Okay, so now you're 23,000 miles out, and now you got to beam it down reliably to something that is sufficiently
focused and small enough.
Yes.
To not irradiate the neighbors, but to...
Put it at Post Brothers. We'll call it a day.
Why not? They're putting in a Tesla Powerwall down there.
I mean, in the long term, in the real long term, if you have a Dyson sphere, that's what you're doing.
I would love that. Yes. Yeah. But this is the baby step.
Again, I remind
this
you.
This is the baby step.
We can't even build 100-mile-per-hour trains here.
Thank you, Brian, for bringing this back down to reality instead of fantasy land here.
Geostationary and have a sufficiently large focusing element so that you can hit a small area on the planet.
If we're going to go in fantasy land, why don't we just live on the Dyson Sphere?
Because we're border bags, and we like it here.
Oh,
we like our mosquitoes and
Dyson spheres aren't designed to be lived on. They're only designed to really capture
orange
energy.
Orange leg spiders.
Oh my God, the poison spiders with 4-inch legs that are like day glow green.
That they're parachuting out of the sky.
So they're
set to hit any time.
They poison to us.
They're coming. Oh,
they're just
coming
slightly
to
venomous,
a local
but
garden
they're,
near
they're
you.
Not, they don't kill you, but
so you get a nice big
venomous.
Black gangrenous.
See, but that's
cyst?
Not the bad part. The bad part is they look scary.
I had one of those and it went away.
4-inch legs, green spiders are going to... And they fly.
I don't really care. I'd rather be bit by one of those than by a tick.
Okay, so they fly, but they don't fly accurately. They fly inaccurately. That's even... It's random
what,
green spider with 4-inch legs.
What, haven't you ever seen Charlotte's Web?
Oh,
and all
my God.
The little babies take off at the end?
Yes, exactly.
Well, imagine if those babies were poisonous.
Yeah. Well, again, the venom, not that bad, but it's the fear factor.
First came the spotted lantern flies, then the cicadas, and now the spiders? Question mark?
So because we love these things, we don't want to live in a Dyson sphere.
We will miss the spiders dropping into our cereal.
You know some melted turd would bring one. Like, they were like, hey, we're going to go somewhere else. Like, some guy's like, yeah, I want
the But I'm perfectly willing to send the silicon life form with the AI and its SpaceX rocket ship to live.
God, they're just going to leave this planet as soon as they're able.
Yeah. Well, you know, they say.
Go to Mars? What? Who?
Oh, I'm alive now and I'm near you monkeys. Bye.
That's what they say. AI threatens human extinction. And that's what you're talking about, Skynet.
That's what it does?
Oh, yeah, because Skynet's just the easy generic joke because everybody's seen Terminator. And we've literally warned ourselves about what we shouldn't do.
There are so many elements of human extinction at play at this moment. It's really breathtaking.
Yeah, it is,
you know, everything
right?
From the original nuclear Holocaust to...
Pandemics,
AI.
Plural.
And
that's my money.
We got. Yeah, we got
the first
biological.
One.
We've got.
Well, that was Stephen Hawking's big fear is AI.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nah, he was afraid of aliens.
What?
And aliens, too. Yeah.
No, Stephen Hawking stated that aliens encounter... We should, if we ever encountered an alien species, we should do everything in our power to avoid contact. Because a superior culture has never actually benefited the one they've encountered. We would be the Indians, and they would turn us, and they would be basically giving us typhoid.
Anthropomorphic pills. Models don't necessarily.
Uh oh.
Yeah, that's a trap he just fell into. anthropomorphizing.
That's the only intelligence in the universe he had to glean an inference from.
We're in touch.
We suck.
We see alien cultures all the time, like, you know, ants, bacteria, viruses, and we just like step on them.
We just ignore them.
So they're just, you know, so inferior, and a superior civilization would look at us that way. It's like,
yeah, like they're installing a bypass on the M95, and the Earth happened to be in the way. It gives me an idea for a.
They eat their most intelligent species, the octopus. They just eat them. Why would they do that?
They could be having them do calculus for them, but they're eating it.
One alien culture observed that the dogs are ruling the planet because the owners of the dogs are made to carry their poop around.
Yes.
Oh, I just watched. That was on an episode of Krepopolis when the humans domesticated the wolves.
Great show, by the way. Excellent show.
What
show
is that?
Krepopolis.
When the humans make peace with the wolves, they come back to their, like, warring tribes, basically, and the humans, like, these wolves can defend us and protect us and help us catch prey. And the wolf's talking to the other wolves, and he's like, these creatures, have you seen what they do to fish and fire? It's amazing. They do nothing but drop food all around. They're covered in grease and salt. Are you kidding me? We will rule these creatures. And to this day, they do. We pick up their poop. We bring them to groomers. We make paintings of them.
If you happened to fly by an Oumuamua and you were taking a scan of the Earth, you would notice that the large yellow Earthlings, when they stop, all the smaller, multicolored Earthlings stop right behind them. And then when the large yellow ones roll on, the smaller ones just, you know, get in line.
And then when they get to certain buildings, these large yellow things give birth.
These smaller ones. Yes, they all these little tiny ones come out of the large yellow. So my conclusion is that school buses
are
on the Earth.
All right, guys, if you want to keep listening to us, the after show will continue, but you're going to have to head on over to WGXE.org. Click on the listen button and the tab that pops up will be at the bottom of. You'll be able to find the Thingularity program playing. Just go there, click the buttons, and if you're not there already, we will be continuing FCC free in about 3 minutes. But until then, we will be polite gentlemen.
Polite.
Krepopolis is a great show. Starring
there's some uncomfortable eye contact on that one.
Polite.
Stars Richard Iwade as one of the main characters as a voice actor. He voice acts, and I think it's got Duncan Trussell, too, if you're a fan of him.
Matt Berry.
Is that who that is? Oh, yeah, and Matt Berry. Yep. Matt Berry's in there, too.
Matt Berry, Richard Iwade.
It's a cartoon
That's
show?
All I need to
cartoon.
Tell you. Go watch it.
On which network?
I'll
upload it for you. Don't worry.
What?
Sorry,
no, that's not going to happen.
It's on Netflix, right?
No, it's on Hulu.
Hulu, okay.
It's a Dan Harmon one. So
there you go. That's the name.
Oh,
of
nice.
Yeah, one of Dan Harmon's.
That makes
new
sense.
Shows.
It's on Hulu, just like Solar Opposites.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but yeah, good show. Like if you like Greek mythology in any way and like, you know, sick humor, perfect. It's great.
It's not just straight Greek mythology. That's like
it's
twisted
very
and
bastardized.
Whatever. Yeah.
But that's great because, like, they make their own extra gods, but you have all the standard ones. Like, the one I saw, they just they released Prometheus. And he's like this cocky douchebag. He's like, thanks for the fire. I mean, come on.
Oh, man. Lights just dimmed. Your power distribution's off there, pal.
That's the compressor kicking, and you got a balanced load there, Brian? Nah, shrugs.
Getting back to your school bus metaphor, I once made a film for Cambridge Films, in which we tried to convey, it was an educational film, we tried to convey what microscopic life was all about. And you look at the complexity of, you know, viruses, bacteria, protozoans, or, you know, the complexity of molecular biology within a cell, and it's inexplicable. But if you were to look at, say, New York City, like pretend it's under a microscope, and you'd see, like, you know, the yellow thing pulling up to a corner and little tiny things going in and out of it.
You got your garbage trucks taking away waste. You got your food